I ignore it.
And we are live. Hi guys, welcome to Flat Earth British. Today in an unbelievable location here with Jason. We are in El Dorado. Yeah man, we got some cool tunage going on there.
Well, there's our sound check.
Yeah. Comms are in order. So we are in El Dorado in Santa Fe, up in the mountains, 7,000 footer in Santa Fe, in New Mexico. We tried to set the camera up so we could show you the mountains, the lower Rockies over there, but the Rio Grande here behind us, it is mind-blowing. But we got some mind-blowing golden information decoded by Jason, and he's kind enough to bring it to the Matt and Lika channel to present it. So we are super grateful for that, Jason. This is going to be a mind blow. We got some really juicy images. We've sorted all that out for you. So present some images and all of the evidence to support Jason's case, which is really, really amazing. Okay. There's going to be stuff said in here that is, academia won't mention and is, from Jason's, evidences, a fact, I think. So that's going to be a mind blow. Okay, so it's some groundbreaking stuff going down here today. So let me introduce Jason Brashears, Arcade Channel. Thank you for joining us again.
Oh, man, I had to travel far and long to get here. Man. For those who already know, I started a new series on my own channel about the Phoenix phenomenon, and it's date specific. I'm showing a whole series of videos about one single event that academia is trying to ignore, and that other genres of like truther channels and stuff are absolutely muddying the waters, and I believe it's intentionally. As a matter of fact, this presentation is about Tiwanaku in Bolivia in South America, and how an ancient civilization built on sea level as a shipping station suddenly ended up at 12,500 foot elevation. But more so, that's this presentation. But Martin and I, we're working on another project. And it doesn't have anything to do with ancient history. It has everything to do with truthers, hypocrisy, hidden agents, agendas. We're working on something a little bit bigger. And we're just going to give you a little hint of that right now. But there's a video coming out, and you know what? It's about time, man, that, things need to be called out. There are things going on that shouldn't be going on, man. It's time for people to just, delete your channels, put up or shut up, debate, do something, because there's a lot of good people out there looking for good information, and they're getting blocked by gatekeepers who call themselves truthers. And I promise you, Martin and I, we're going to call them out. We're going to do it in one video, and don't care. Consequences be damned. These things need to be known by the community. What's going on behind the scenes? What's going on all throughout this truther community? We don't give a damn about intelligence agencies. We don't give a damn about rich billionaire NGOs that are all got their hands all in the community. Screw all that. It's too late for self-preservation. It's time to get this shit down. It's time to reveal a lot of stuff, man. And yeah, I'm sick of it. I'm totally sick of it. So, and I know Martin is too.
I've been thinking it for a long while. It's just everyone's thinking it, but nobody wants to say it.
Everybody's thinking it. Nobody wants to say it. So we're going to call it out.
Just lift the lid.
But until then, we're going to have a blast. This man's got some awesome images to show.
Awesome. Some crazy cool books. Can't wait to dig into these books as well.
I see Face Diaper OG.
Yeah.
He's in the chat.
Yeah, indeed. All the guys in
there. Sheba Shampoo?
Yeah.
Oh, you gave me a blue wrench, man. I got me a wrench.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, Jason, a blue wrench-ich?
That's a cool name. Welsh Dragon Metals?
That's my son.
Oh, okay.
Lawrence Leaker. Yeah, that's my son.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, man. Might get to see him.
Man, I can't imagine a mini-me version of you running around.
Yeah, he's just like me. He's just taller. He's very much like me.
Somebody says, woohoo, here comes the rooster.
No shit.
Yeah, man. Listen, we have already given a presentation among our friends here. We got a pretty packed house. We're traveling with a lot of people. We're going to different places, and we're taking in locals. Locals in the cities that we visit, we're taking in locals.
We're keeping them. They're coming with us.
We meet people, and all that. Say, hey, where you stay? I'm staying at a hotel. No, man, pack your stuff. Come on, we're moving the house with us. We did that at Angel Fire. We're doing it here. Yeah, we're just picking up strangers. So,
nice job.
Big job. So, you know what?
I was sitting behind you. I felt that. Oh, yeah. I just realized it.
So, yeah, man, that's how we roll. We're not trying to practice exclusions. No. So, before we do what we're doing here, that sound good?
Yeah, man.
Okay. The Phoenix Bomb phenomenon is far more well documented than I have conveyed. I'm actually guilty of trying to bait people in the academic community or other truther channels. I'm going to let you know right now, I'm guilty of that. I've told my own listeners that I've been holding back and that I have overwhelming amount of documentation for the Phoenix phenomenon, the 138-year periodicity of this weird editing and natural disasters timeline that leads to 2040. I've been holding back on my Phoenix thesis because I've been waiting for somebody to attack me, but it's not coming. It hasn't come. I can't wait any longer, so I started my new series, The Ogygian Deluge, because it's good. This series alone is going to be 5 or 6 videos about a single year. The year is 1687 BC in the month of May when the entire old Bronze Age world collapsed. Every single civilization in the world died. And what came out of that 25 years of darkness was basically the ancient world that academia teaches us about. The old world of Egypt and Babylon and ancient the pre-Greeks, the Achaeans, Knossos. This is the world we're familiar with. But the world that was in existence before 1687 BC was not like that. Far more sophisticated, machine learning. They were using machines to build stone, gigantic stone edifices. They had the ability to move blocks that were cut, dressed, and polished in situ, and then remove them from the quarry without creating stress fractures in blocks that are 72 feet long and 400 tons. We can't do that today, but they did it, and they did it regularly. So this is what we're talking about. We are talking about one location in the entire world. The first video in this series was on my channel, and it was about Easter Island and how the same symbols in Easter Island, the same type of statuary, architectural designs are found at Tiahuanaco in Bolivia, South America. They are found at Göbekli Tepe. I still can't say that word. But they're found at that place that Graham Hancock likes a lot.
Yeah.
The same symbols, Rongo Rongo, that's found on the back of the statues of Easter Island, have been found in Hittite Anatolia, right there by all the Tepe sites. Göbekli Tepe. How you say that shit?
Göbekli Tepe.
I'll never say it.
Turkish.
That place right there is only one of 23 or 24 sites that are just like it all through. But they only focus on a couple of them because the other ones absolutely show their age. They're not that old, guys. No. We're being deliberately lied to. Yeah, I go on my own videos on my channel address this. But in this series here, 1687 BC, the Phoenix appeared in the sky. It was documented. And it completely destroyed Easter Island. And now, as we're going to see, it destroyed Tiahuanaco, Pumapunka, all the Andes civilizations. That's 12,500 feet above sea level. But when these cities and pyramids were built, they were only 300 or 400 feet above sea level. And this isn't Jason and Martin telling you this. This is the archaeologists who've been on site and found the fossilized coastlines. They have found the fossils. They have found all the material from that civilization spread across, just laying on the ground, fossilized in place. Hammers, chisels, human skeletons, animals, toxodonts. They don't even exist anymore. They're extinct. But they existed at this time when the city was destroyed. But the real gem of this video here, we're going to decode the Gate of the Sun, and we're going to show you what the scholars have been hiding, because all their interpretations of trying to figure out what the Tiahuanaco calendar means on the Gate of the Sun, they have been unsuccessful, because they've all been trying to fit a 365-day year onto the system. preconceptions have completely stopped academia from understanding how the ancient Peruvians counted time. We're going to show you, because it's very easy. Like all truths, it's very simple. We're going to show you. It's unbelievable. Decoding the gate. It's unbelievable. And it makes sense of all the epics from ancient Sumer and Akkad that talk about when the sun gods had to pass through 12 gates. It's all explained to Tiwanaku. And Sumer, Akkad, and Babylonia are on the opposite side of the world. So it's very interesting.
That's same for them, though. It would have been the same
for them. It would have been the same for them. Yeah, same belief, just demonstrated culturally in a different artistic way.
Actually, my bad.
Yeah, man. So, we don't want to give them too much about what we're doing.
Yeah.
But, it's walking on rice paper is something I'm not going to do. I'm not going to. And I know Martin's not either, because we've been talking for days. And you know what? It's time for a lot of things in the truther community to be called out. It's time for individuals to be called out about who they're associated to, what's going on, money that's being traded hands, who won't talk to who anymore because somebody behind the scene has paid them for their silence, people who are attacking people. And listen, man, this stuff's been going on for years and nobody's been calling it out. But yeah, it's far more sophisticated. This networking, trying to work against people. Y'all, I'm going to tell you now, Martin and Jason are having it. Not only are we going to call it out, we're going to attack it head on. I says, truthers around here are either going to get on board with telling the truth and doing, you know, and we're not trying to put perimeters on truth. But we can know by spirit where a person walks.
Yeah.
We can judge by spirit the measure of a man's ways, the rhythm and the architecture of their personality. And we can do that by just assessing the comment section, because we're going to ask you guys the right questions and you're going to tell us in the comment sections. And those truthers and those channels and those haters and all that you guys mentioned, those are the ones we're going to focus on. You know, I'm tired of all the duplicity. And so is Martin. We're going to put people's backs against the wall. We're going to show the entire community who's about that life and who's not. Well, we're just going to expose. We're going to put light in the darkness. That's what we're going to do.
About time, too.
100%.
Instead of just, like, ignoring it, let me all carry on. Which is what's been going on.
Yeah, man. It's too late in the game. It's too late in the game to be afraid about anything. It's too late in the game. Mm. In my neck of the woods, we call it balls to the wall.
Yeah. I've added up to there. With it all.
Yeah, man.
Years of it.
What a... Oh, garden goddess.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Linda.
They call you Marticus?
Marticus, yes. Marticus Farticus Esquire the Third. It's always been my name, to Mandela effect. People think I used to be called Martin. I don't recall that. Might be true. So people are doing the call-out thing at the moment in chat.
What kind of call-out thing?
Somebody's got Santos Bonacci question mark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we ain't starting that on this video.
No, we ain't.
This video's not about that. We're just letting you know what's coming. And I'm going to tell you now, we're so serious about it that we're already designing our public notices. Yeah, we're going to blast this across YouTube. We're going to blast this across Facebook. And we're going to get everybody knowing what's going to happen.
You know, everybody is going to
I'm all cool with my enemies being on board and watching me, because they just might get called out in the video.
Give them something to do.
Yeah, give them something to do.
Nah. Your bottom feed in, they're good at that.
Yeah, man.
It is the psyop of dark powers just mincing around the community and just driving people down crazy portals of disinformation. And then some of them never ever come back. Some of them have worse happen. It's just, no.
Yeah, but see, a lot of people in the community don't even know how some of these channels started, who funded them, how they got started, where they got their material.
Or even who they are.
And who they used to be before they were the channel they are today. Most people don't know all this, man. Some of these people got histories, man. They used to be trolls. They used to be severe attackers against the community who then all of a sudden cleaned up their act, started putting videos out, and nobody remembers who they were back then. There's a lot of these guys, and you know their names. Yeah, guy. We're not pulling no punches. So that's another video. That's coming to a neighborhood, you know, near you real quick.
Funny, Otto.
What do you say?
Oh, I'm not reading it up.
right? So Harold T. Wilkins in the 1950s published some really astonishing books. I've talked about him on my channel. One of his books is Ancient Mysteries of Old South America. Another one is Hidden Mysteries of Central and South America. Both of his books are about Central and South America. Well, the man spent over 20 years going through all the traditions and the legends and all that. He never knew anything about the Phoenix phenomenon. The word Phoenix doesn't appear anywhere in his books. And yet still, it is his conclusion after 20 years of research and two published books that the ancient world was completely destroyed two times and by the same agency. And he describes it. He says that an unusual object appeared in the sky. When it appeared in the sky, all of a sudden, the sun went dark. Sometimes the moon looked blood red. Red dust and red rain and red mud fell all over the world. Earthquakes began breaking up the continent.
Excuse me.
That is it. It's been a double echo the whole time.
No, it's not. It's this page is open and it wasn't before. Sorry about that. There we are. Sorry. Okay.
Tsunamis took it. Oh, yeah, it's catching up. See the chat's catching up.
Yeah. Anyway, this is the book you're talking about, Mysteries of Ancient South America.
Yeah, the book is fantastic.
It is a fantastic
book. Oh, you have a link for that in the description?
Yeah, they're in the description box for most of these books.
Okay, we talked about the Children of the Sun dynasties that collapsed. This man, Harold T. Wilkins, was a genius before his time. Not knowing anything of the Phoenix phenomenon, the 138-year periodicity, he knew nothing, and yet he still nailed it perfectly. He described the ancient world as being destroyed in two floods caused by a celestial object. The Great Flood of Noah and a flood that happened later, which is actually better recorded. There's more historical data about it. It's called the Flood of Ogyges. This is the Ogygian Flood. In both floods, the entire world was destroyed. All civilizations reset back to square one. So Harold T. Wilkins goes into a lot of depth about this destruction happening all over the world. But when it comes to Tiahuanaco, he's very specific. He says, as soon as the earthquakes began, the people were thrust into the sky. The Andes Mountains appeared in a day. They said that they knew of an ancient prophecy of the death of the sun, and they had disregarded it. This is what the survivors say. And when the sun died, their civilization was thrust into the sky. This is exactly what the fossil record shows. We've got what's his name? Poznanski?
Poznanski.
We have the research of Poznanski, Hans Horberger, and Hans Bellamy, who wrote Before the Flood. And in those books, we find out that hammers and chisels, workshops open to the sky, were absolutely abandoned. Where have you heard that before? Those of you on my channel, you know where you've heard that before. All the workshops, all the hammers, archaeologists found them embedded in fossilized mud. They found all their tools were just dropped, and they ran for their life. Where have you heard that before? Easter Island. The workshops of Easter Island were identical. Archaeologists were baffled that all these statues were left in the quarry unfinished. And all around the statues in the mud is fossilized hammers and chisels. It's crazy, isn't it? They were interrupted.
They said there was an absence of tools at Göbekli Tepe. They said there was no tools whatsoever or any evidence of any inhabitation, whatever it was.
Well, that would only mean that place was finished construction before the cataclysm happened.
That's what my
question. Also, it's my opinion that the Tepes are from the Great Flood of Noah, not from the Ogygian Flood. They're 552 years
old. Yeah, okay. Two different
times. Totally different floods.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is what Harold T. Wilkins says. Harold T. Wilkins says that Tiahuanaco was part of the second flood. And as his evidence, he cites H.S. Bellamy. You saw me reading that book this morning?
Yeah,
I got the book in there.
That's
right now. H.S. Bellamy wrote a book called Before the Flood, and it's amazing. And in this book, He interviewed a lot of the locals in that area, and they told a fascinating story. Matter of fact, I have the story here. Oh, you want to show the Before the Flood?
Yeah, sure. There we got all that juice there. Before the Flood. That's the Peru illustration. Secrets of Ancients and Mysteries. I haven't got
Hans Bellamy. You don't have that one?
No, I don't think I
do. Okay, well, huh? That's all right. There's Hans Bellamy, that right there.
Oh, that one. Yeah, you know, okay. Kinda.
That's another book of his.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. But anyway, this is what he said in Before the Flood. He said that on page 72, he said that local myths recorded in the Tiwanaku region fully support these speculations. After a great flood, which happened in the times of old, the country was populated again when men and women came back to the surface from caves and from ships in the sea. This is precisely what I told you is the story of the Anunnaki, the Anuna. It's the same thing. In the Book of Enoch, remember, where did the Watchers come from? A mountain. High up in a mountain, they came out the underground egresses from mountain holds, and they descended to the valley people after a reset. Here's the same thing right here. Tiwanaku was destroyed in 1687 BC by the Phoenix after an older flood. That's what the tradition says. The locals say there was two floods. The second one is the one for which they just never recovered. They never rebuilt that civilization. So, yeah, it's really interesting that Hans Bellamy would record that there was two floods. And the second one, 1687 BC, was about a prophecy of the coming dying of the sun. And Hans Bellamy wrote, it was the beginning of the age of darkness. In Peruvian, Aymara, it is, what is that, Chamacpasha? What is that, Chamacpasha? Is that what that says?
Chamacpasha.
Something like that. When the sun was lost in the sky, of which the mythology of the Urus tells us, when they say Tiwanaku rose from the sea to dwell in the sky. That's amazing. The ancient tribes of people who live there admit the same thing the archaeologists have found. Hmm. Seashells at 12,500 foot elevation. They found fossils of marine life all around Tiwanaku. What body of water is right next to Tiwanaku?
Lake Titicaca.
Can you tell them what you know about Lake Titicaca?
Well, apparently it had a giant tsunami which is responsible for wiping out Pumapunku. That is what the official narrative is. But it's a very high elevation of water.
Well, I would have to agree with that. Let me tell you why. Pumapunku is not like Tiwanaku. Pumapunku is nearby. And the traditions about Pumapunku is that a tsunami and a flood destroyed it. But it would have been the flood of Noah. Because Pumapunku was already in ruins when they started building Tiwanaku after the flood. So the tsunami is true, but when Tiwanaku was originally being built, where was it? It was at sea level.
Oh, yeah, but this is the thing.
So Pumapunku was destroyed by the tsunami. Then they came and built Tiwanaku right next to it.
So it's wrong and it's right.
It's wrong and it's right. Yeah. And then 552 years later, the Ogygian earthquake shoved it 12,500 feet. Deal. This is the story that's put out by Hans Bellamy. It's amazing. It fits the evidence. We have vapor canopy fossils and skeletons of animals that are found all around Lake Titicaca. So these died at the Great Flood, but the elevation of Lake Titicaca happened at the Ogygian Flood. I don't know if you have a picture of a map of Lake Titicaca. Listen, at Lake Titicaca, it is the only lake in the world that has sharks, seahorses, jellyfish. Oh, you know what? I did give you a black and white old map.
Yeah, it's in some of the other images.
Okay.
And I think for the
Lake Titicaca was once a part of the Pacific Ocean. It was a bay. It was just simply a bay where ships landed pre-1687 BC. Those are beautiful pictures. Mm-hmm. Can you see those?
Yeah, we'll just be showing them. They're presenting them here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're looking good.
Yeah, those beautiful pictures.
Yeah.
So we're looking at 12,500 foot elevation right here. This body of water used to be ocean. And the animals that were trapped in this body of water are all Pacific oceanic marine life forms. but over centuries of being separated from the Pacific and in a different atmospheric pressure, they literally adapted to their environment. So today, Lake Titicaca is a freshwater lake with sharks, jellyfish, marine fish, marine life, seahorses, all that. And seahorses are also found fossilized all over the area.
Yeah, they say it's a fraction of its original size as well.
Yeah.
You know, like charts in Africa, same sort of thing going on. It would have built all of this down here. Essentially.
Yes,
so
there,
they say.
Yeah, there's been ruins found in the mud all around Lake Titicaca.
Yeah.
But it was where Pumapunca was originally located. But Pumapunca is 5 centuries older than Tiahuanaco. It was totally destroyed by the Great
Fire. You want to take a look at some of that images?
Yeah, let me explain Pumapunca, because it's not like Tiahuanaco. They're side by side, and there's a reason why they built the newer place, Tiahuanaco, next to the older. But Pumapunca, as I've told you guys in my presentations, the very first megalithic sites that we have around the world are technolithic. This is a term that was coined by James O'Conn. Technolithic means they were machined. They were cut, dressed, and polished to absolute perfection so well that it's very obvious that the little niches that we find on them and the knobs and all these stones were made and manufactured by machines.
Yeah.
This was a very ancient, technologically advanced civilization during the vapor canopy.
Look at that for a light.
Yeah, look at some of these Pumapunca.
You know,
without
machining, that would.
We're going to show you pictures right now that proves that machines created molds. These are molds for machine parts made out of solid rhyolite, andesite, granite. It's all right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Show them something else.
Yeah.
These are machined stones. This is what Pumapunca is. It's just like a construction crew today coming in with all kinds of heavy equipment and using augers and routers, and this is what they did.
So what you make of these strange iconographies everywhere? You got the H blocks, you got these ones there.
You're not looking at, for those of you who don't know about Pumapunca, you're not looking at stones that were dressed and carved 300, 400, 500 years ago. These aren't European. These were done 4,000 years ago, according to the best archaeological evidence. That is the only fuel that keeps the ancient aliens community going.
Someone just suggesting that could these be concrete casts, these bit casts?
These are casts, yes.
These
are machines.
Yes. This is exactly what they look like.
What I was telling Martin this morning they poured metals into these. These are what you're looking at are molds.
Yes.
That's what they did.
That makes sense.
They're making machine parts. And we're going to prove it as soon as he goes through some more pictures. You're going to see the molds.
Ka-ching. That was really good. Well done. So there's some of these blocks here and these rivets.
Okay, let me explain.
What's that?
Okay, do you see these barbell rivets right here? Mm. This is how you earthquake-proof your construction.
Ah.
You don't use cement and lime and all that because the convection currents will break all that and stress fractures will just make the wall weaker. You put stone side by side with these little niches right here, like barbells, and you fill them with silver. The silver will harden inside those niches, but it will give them the strength to stay together. And when the earthquake sends the shock waves out, the silver in there will vibrate to a frequency and expand. And the expansion does two things. It absorbs the shock and it fills those niches and makes the wall stronger as the earthquake is vibrant.
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
This is a very popular ancient building technique. In the technolithic period.
Wow.
Let's go there.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's,
so you see more examples here. Yeah. They poured metals into that because that's where the metals would absorb the shock and keep the vibrations away from the stone, and they would also expand from the shock when it would heat them up. Then those metals would vibrate, expand, mm-hmm. and it would make that wall even harder and stronger as the earthquake increased.
That's amazing. Oh, yeah.
No, it's perfect.
Exactly. That looks like a mold. It really does look like a mold.
Yep. That's what that is.
Oh, my God.
They were earthquake. They were just earthquake proofing their architecture. That's it.
That's way back.
Yep.
Again, that definitely looks like a mold. And there. That's the same thing as you were talking about. This stone here, there's two different sorts. That's like a coating. Granite-y substance.
Well, the problem is the other stone that was here has been moved. But there was a stone that was right next to it.
Yeah. All right. So, my back got cut. The size of that thing there, then.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Then you got these H blocks everywhere.
Now, these H blocks are used by the ancient aliens community all the time. Mm. Listen, their technolithic architecture is only evidence of high sophistication in antiquity. The problem is the ancient aliens community, they make the unnecessary leap that ancient technology in the old world simply means it was UFOs. It was extraterrestrials. And we don't have any evidence of that. What we have is evidence of human civilizations that have been reset over and over and over. In the historical record, when we read all the ancient writers like Pliny the Elder, Herodotus, Eusebius, of the church fathers, and especially Arnobius. When we read these authors, we read all about resets. We read all about civilizations that vanish, and that the history of the world, according to Lucretius, in 51 BC, he said the entire history of the world is measured in earthquakes. Hmm. So we don't have any ancient authors talking about aliens and all that. It's advanced human civilization. Remember, I tell you guys all the time, it only takes 200 years to go from horse and buggy to Hadron Collider. So, yeah, that's Gate of the Sun. We need to get to that last.
I know. It's just kind of an image of Pumapunku, but some of this advanced machinery. Look at this. Look at this. This honeycomb on the side.
The honeycomb. Yeah, the honeycomb. That's a stamp.
It's a stamp.
That's a stamp. They poured metal over that, and I guarantee you, a lot of that ended up in the conquistador ship holds when they melted that back down and sent it back to Spain.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is the shipping place.
Yeah, that's what they did.
Yeah.
Stole all that.
Yeah. Mold. Yeah. Okay. I'm getting the picture. Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, it would have been a big old thing. I'd have poured metal over that whole thing. It would have been a sheet. It would have been a sheet mold of writing, and they would have put it on the temple wall or something.
Wow, and this is a big complex as well, isn't it?
It's huge. Yeah. It's huge. There's way more. Yeah, you can see all the decor and stuff.
Yeah, and these stones are just strewn all over the landscape by some apocalyptic event. Yeah, these are molds. Yep. This is for advanced tech, man. If you could decode what they're actually building, yeah, it's got the hole in the bottom as well.
So for those who don't know, the Bolivian government has accepted from four different sources, archaeologists around the world came to Tiahuanaco at different times over the last 70, 80 years, and they have done all kinds of scientific testing all over the deal, and it is conclusively accepted by the Bolivian government that the ruins of Tiahuanaco date to the 1700 BC. That is a scientific bullseye to 1687 BC. It's literally 13 years, which is a bullseye because 1700 BC, the scientific dating, is only an approximate. And the 1687 BC, and what we're going to see in the Ogygian, like we did with Easter Island, we found out Easter Island was ruined in 1700 BC as well. So if Tiahuanaco was destroyed at the same time then what's really going to be interesting is when I show you guys how each area of the world, archaeologists and scientists have dated that destruction, and it's always 1700 BC, not all of them. W.J. Perry in Children of the Sun, a 551-page book, he said that the entire world and all these civilizations were destroyed when something happened to the sun in the year 1688 BC. He was 1 year off.
So anyway, it stood still.
Yeah, he said he was 1 year off. That's a nice one there.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, but this top stone don't look like the same thing as it's the bottom. It sort of looks like it's just been put on there.
Now, I know your community is not real familiar, except for the ones that watch me too. They're not really familiar. Well, my specialty is calendars. It's just showing chronological systems.
No.
Real quick, my own listeners really know what I'm talking about. You guys know that the whole Nemesis chronology, the beginning of the Anunnaki timeline, was 5239 BC. And what's interesting is that the calendrics also show that this massive destruction happened in 1687 BC at Tiahuanaco. Because on the Gate of the Sun, which is a picture he just showed you guys, on the Gate of the Sun, we have a depiction of these winged headdress wearing individuals. And some scholars say they're angels. Some scholars say they're gods. If we accept them as being representations of the ancient Sumerian Anunnaki, the Anunna, then it makes sense because...
So that's the top of the...
This right here.
Yeah.
We're going to decode this for you toward the end of this video. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
But we're looking at a depiction of divinities being remembered by a culture over 1,000 years after these individual personalities are gone. So this is in the 18th and 19th centuries BC when Tiahuanaco was being built. It was only destroyed in 1687 BC. Hmm. So it's interesting to find out that the destruction of Tiahuanaco was 3,552 years of the Anunnaki calendar that started in 5239 BC. 3,000 years to the Great Flood plus 552 years of Phoenix Cycle to 1687 BC. But 3,552 years also gives us a geomarker calendrically, and it's very interesting. Because 3,552 years is precisely 1776 plus 1776 years. And for those of you who follow my Chronicon, major events in the Americas are always in multiples of 444 years, which is 1776 when you multiply it by four. 444 times 4 is 1776. American independence for the 13 colonies. Remember, 13 is an ancient American number belonging to the Olmecs and the Maya. 13, the 13th region of the world was the Americas. So we have here 1776 plus 1776 identifying a major destruction in the Americas on the Anunnaki timeline that started with 5239 BC. What confirms this is that the Olmec calendar is an American calendar. And the year 1687 BC in our calendar was the destruction of Tiahuanaco. However, the Ogygian Deluge. However, it's also the 1,687th year of the Olmec calendar. Going forward and going backward in time, two different calendrical systems, both show 1687. Both show a destruction in the Americas. This is the calendars for this day. It's very, if you saw it on a chart, it's even more fascinating. But we'll get to that in another presentation. So, Tiahuanaco was a whole region covered in seashells.
Yeah.
We're going to get back to the Gate of the Sun later. Do you have any pictures of like the Kaiseiya Temple?
Yes, I sure do. We are so on it.
Look at the size of that thing. That's very interesting. Those heads sticking out of those blocks like that?
Yeah.
There's another place in the world where you find that. In central Mexico, there's a pyramid that's got 138... in recognition of the 138.
Wow, I just found that
for the Phoenix number.
Oh, my days.
It's crazy. Oh, that's the Bolivia National Archaeological Institute official dating of Tiahuanaco's destruction. Look at that, 1700 BC.
Yeah.
It's nailed for the Ogygian Deluge. It's crazy. So there is crossover between what's interesting is things found at Pumapunca right next to Tiahuanaco. The exact same architectural styles have been noted by archaeologists to be of Malta. Malta in the middle of the Mediterranean. Now remember, I showed you guys Easter Island and Tiahuanaco were a part of what Harold T. Wilkins calls the ancient Heliolithic Maritime Empire. It was a shipping guild.
Mm.
Shipping guild. Tiahuanaco, archaeologists have never really made the association to Tiahuanaco being a shipping harbor. Why? Because it's 12,500 feet in the air. However, 100 years ago, Poznanski and H.S. Bellamy actually recorded the fossilized beach at 12,000 feet elevation, showing that Tiahuanaco was right there at sea level at one time.
Is that what we were looking at with White Sands at 7,000 or 8,000 feet?
Oh, no doubt. What is it called? White Sands?
White Sands.
No. White Sands is missile base. That's right. We were at the Great Sand Dunes.
Great Sand Dunes,
yeah. The Great Sand Dunes.
Yeah.
And we're going back.
Yeah, that was mad.
We're climbing those dunes, bro.
Mountain high sand dunes. Who even knew?
It's crazy. So the Gate of the Sun has, remember, I just associated the Gate of the Sun to the idea of the ancient Anunnaki. So we do have another correlate there with the Anunnaki, because the Anunnaki is the Babylonian version of the older Sumerian Anunna. And on the Gate of the Sun, this figure you see right here with these big eyes like watchers, this figure right here, he has tears coming down his eyes. This is noted by archaeologists even as much as 100 years ago, and they call the god on the Gate of Tiwanaku the Weeping God. What's interesting is that in Babylon, we have the same depiction of a god between two pillars, and he's crying, and they call him Tammuz. And this is why in the Old Testament, in the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah actually condemns four women for sitting outside a temple and weeping for Tammuz. This is an old Babylonian. It was a type of worship. Tammuz was a god who had been destroyed in a disaster. And it was very popular in ancient Babylon for women to sit outside a temple and cry. They would make themselves cry because to them it was a type of worship in honor of Tammuz. This is in Babylon. This is ancient Babylonian tradition, but it's also mentioned in the Old Testament. And we find it right here on the Gate of the Sun.
Bolivia.
In Bolivia, South America.
Just crazy.
Yeah, the same effigy of the god holding between two pillars and two staffs is also reminiscent of hundreds of depictions of Gilgamesh all throughout the ancient Near East.
Yeah.
Remember guys, he was the lord of the animals, and that's what we have on the Gate of the Sun. There's like 192 small animal symbols that are found on the gate. It's really hard. You have to look at them and pin in ink illustrations because the stone doesn't really show it. But in the book I have from like 1902.
You have that. You want to show it up?
Bring it on. You have one?
I have the book which shows these, you know,
calendar that you see on the Gate of the Sun, those symbols are also found on the Kalasaya temple in the center of Tiwanaku near the Akampana pyramid. So this is a pen and ink illustration of the detail of that stonework. You can't really see it in the stonework.
Wait, he's crying there.
He's crying. There's tears. He's crying tears right there. And what's crazy is those are leopard puma heads.
Yeah.
The tears are like puma heads, which is no different than the lion's heads of Gilgamesh in the ancient Near East. We have a lot of crossover here. We're talking about cultures that were in contact or they had a common origin. We're going to decode. At the end of the video, we're going to decode the Gate of the Sun. It's going to blow your mind.
It is.
It's going to blow your mind. So.
Yeah, but look at these other big images out of this book.
There's Lake Titicaca. There's a map right there. Yeah, I drew that arrow so you could see how close Tiwanaku was to the water.
Right.
But ships used to come up to Tiwanaku from long distances in other parts of the world. But it's hard to believe because Tiwanaku is 12,500 feet elevation. But when you go through all the data, you realize it's been thrust up. Just like the natives said, just like archaeologists say, the whole area was thrust up in a single day when the sun died. This is their tradition.
Wow. How many miles is from the actual sea this side? And look at that. That's supposed to be from antiquity.
That right there is that is a technolithic artifact right there. Like I told you guys, this is what a stone would look like if it was machined by something of great technological advancement. This is the stone you're looking at. You can't replicate that with chisels. This is something that you see on aisle 40 of AutoZone.
Printed somewhere. Yeah.
This is something you see. Yeah. Here it is right here. 4,000 or 5,000 years old. It's just sitting in the mud at Pumapunka. It's crazy.
It is absolutely crazy. And that aspect there. Yeah. So
right here, archaeologists were baffled to find chalky deposits of ancient seaweed with lime 2 yards deep, 6 foot deep of fossils, shells, seashells, seaweed at 12,500 foot elevation.
Man, oh my.
So we have archaeological evidence that comports with what the natives say and comports with what archaeologists say of all the other artifacts they found and what these archaeologists were claiming. that Tiwanaku was built as a port, and nobody believed these early archaeologists because it was at 12,005-foot elevation. It's crazy. So Wilkins, Harold T. Wilkins, talking about Tiwanaku, he said that the stones were ready to be placed, but they were unfinished, and the entire port was unfinished. It was under construction. He says the heaps of blocks of mason stones bear every evidence of having been abandoned by men who were fleeing for their lives. They were taken by surprise by a cataclysm. It's crazy. Remember, this guy wrote this book, he published this book in the 1950s. And remember, he is very, very clear. The ancient world was destroyed two times and by the same mechanism. And both times, a red star appeared in the sky and got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then the sun went dark. The moon turned blood red. Red dust, red rain, red mud, and red rocks fell from the sky while the earth shook, earthquake. Big old chasms open, tsunamis destroyed the fleets of ships and harbors, and the Andes Mountains were thrust 12,000 feet in the air. All in a day, in one day. He describes this, and he says this is the second time that this same object had destroyed the whole world. He said the first time was so terrible, we don't have any written records about it. And he's referring to the flood of Noah.
Yeah.
This is the 1687 BC Ogygian flood. It's different. It started a 25-year darkness where the whole world starved. It actually created a 300-year dark age. But this is the Ogygian delusion. This is my second video on this year, 1687 BC. It's crazy, isn't it, man?
Yeah, is it in the Colburn Bible?
Yes, Colburn Bible gives a perfect description of what happened.
Yeah, sure.
It called it the doom shape.
This is an interesting fact, too, you know.
Oh, I got to say this right here. Because we were talking about the weeping god.
Yeah.
Harold T. Wilkins found another tradition in Japan about a weeping god. But in that tradition, in Japan, the weeping god was crying because the goddess Amaterasu had been injured when the sun disappeared. It's a Japanese legend. Harold, I love Harold T. Wilkins.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was so mystified by the ruins of Tiwanaku, he literally published in 1953 that it is apparent that the ruins of Tiwanaku are older than the Andes Mountains themselves.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they came up out of the sea. Look, fossil fish. Tropical fish have been found fossilized at 12,000 feet. So there's another area. Oh, we didn't get pictures of this one, but that's okay.
Might have.
There's another area thousands of miles away in Colombia. It's called the Giant's Field.
Oh, no.
And what's really interesting about it is that it's at the exact same elevation as Tiwanaku, meaning it was at sea level before this disaster. But it's called the Giant's Field because mammoth bones, toxodonts, three-toed sloth, megafauna, human skeletons, artifacts, weapons, hammers, everything. It's almost as if everything in that valley got flooded. And as the water went down, it deposited all the dead bodies together into a mat. And then they just dehydrated and they fossilized all together.
Wow.
It's called the Giant's Field. The entire field is a fossil.
Wow. I don't believe I've seen that on any documentaries or anything.
Yeah, I've read about it in David Hatcher Childress's books, too. It's called Giant's Field. It's near Bogota.
All right.
Colombia. But it's at the exact same elevation as Tiwanaku. Yes, Harold T. Wilkins, man. He's a man before his time, man. What you got there? Is that the...
Palace.
Okay, yeah.
But this artifact, does that remind you of anything?
Yeah, hell yeah, it does. It's very similar to Easter Island. They got their hands in front, holding
and they have, you see their hands also in Gobekli Tepe, don't you?
Yes, I showed a video, man, all the crossover between Gobekli Tepe and Easter Island and Tiwanaku, there's no way that those sites in Turkey can be 10,000 BC when archaeologists say Easter Island is only 500 years old.
Yeah, sure.
So stupid. It is so stupid.
You know the story, surely, of Father Crespi?
That sounds familiar.
Well, he's a priest. He lived in the jungle in South America, and the natives used to keep bringing him artifacts out of the jungle, which they found in their hidden El Dorados or the hidden, you know, civilization that they had in the jungle. And it was Mesopotamian artifacts.
Really?
Yeah, oh. Yeah. I've got a book on it. It's actually a study of...
You know, some people theorize that's why Colonel Fawcett was killed. Colonel Fawcett in the 1930s and 40s,
right.
He went into the Amazonian jungle and came back and said, there's stone cities and you're perfectly
right. Yeah.
He says, they're Phoenician.
Yeah.
When he said Phoenician, he signed his death.
Yeah, he did.
They killed Colonel Fawcett.
So it's that. It's just primitive vegetation and it's just too vast and inexplicable. You can't go there. So.
Oh, Colonel Fawcett. We may have to do a visit on Colonel Fawcett.
Yeah.
Oh, the crystal skull.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
Yeah. I don't know about his wife, though. You know, I doubt about, you know, the narrative of the crystal skull.
I have a lot of badass pictures of the crystal skull. So if you want to do a video on it,
I have two.
Yeah. I like a lot of those pictures.
Yeah. But it's super interesting, obviously.
Yeah, man.
You know, if they can hold this information, like the way they say, then it's technology.
Yeah.
Whatever, they're impossible to reproduce in the modern day anyway, these things. It's glass skulls. And the old H blocks.
Oh, even I got Colonel Fawcett right here. Colonel Fawcett wrote, before he died, Colonel Fawcett wrote the megalithic ruins of Tiwanaku were never built on the Indies at all.
They weren't that.
There was no mountain.
There was no
until the earthquake.
Yeah,
the earthquake shoved all that from under the Pacific. If they were under the Pacific, Tiwanaku was an island. Shoved it all the way up 12,000 feet
in an instant.
Created the whole South American continent. It's crazy.
So it's not the same for the Rockies then, because the Andes are just sort of an extension, isn't it? You know, they just go, this spine of mountain goes up the whole west of North and South America. It's, you know.
Well, there's a narrow strip that connects North America and South America.
You are,
and it's at Central America.
Yeah, that Panama bit.
Yeah.
Where the canal is.
It's a narrow strip.
Yeah, really narrow. Okay.
Hey, well, let me read this out of 1953, Harold T. Wilkins. Can I read this section?
Sure.
This is straight out of his book about Tiwanaku. Ancient Mysteries. He wrote a book called Ancient Mysteries of South America. He said on page 173, Harold T. Wilkins said, all the signs on the ruins of Tiwanaku point to a great earthquake accompanied by a tremendous volcanism. The sea sweeping inshore in gigantic tidal waves. This is when it was still at sea level.
Hmm.
It engulfed the great city. This is what washed everything away. This is why Pumapunka and Tiwanaku had the stones that are gigantic. Look, all scattered. Because tidal waves came in and did all that. So, same thing that happened at Malta. That's why all these ruins on Malta are in the water, not on the land.
Yeah.
Malta, right off the coast of Malta, are gigantic blocks that came from Hagar Keen and the Hypogeum. Yeah, they just, tsunami took all that out. So, then came a second appalling disaster which buried the smoking ruins under a great heap of muck, alluvium, mud, and sand. Everything was reduced to chaos. Fragments of skeletons of men and animals lie anyhow among the broken massive stones of megalithic proportions. Bits of pottery depict prehistoric animals. Remember, guys, anytime you hear prehistoric and all that, it's vapor canopy.
Yeah.
These are vapor canopy life forms.
Megalodons.
Yeah. Huge reptiles, huge amphibians, and megafauna. So pottery, jewels, and implements of engineering and architecture are inextricably mixed in utmost confusion. Remember, we just showed you technolithic stuff.
Yeah.
These people were very sophisticated. The heaps of blocks of mason stone bear every evidence of having been abandoned by men who were fleeing for their lives and taken by surprise. Also, what strikes the imagination so vividly are the coverings of extremely ancient volcanic ash and powder which overlays the ruins of the entire city. Remember, Phoenix always brings that red powder.
Yeah.
Always, the whole sky fills up with red dust. One image, I don't know if we have a picture of this, but there's one image, one figurine that was found at Tiwanaku. The entire figurine was made of human bones.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Probably don't have that one.
Maybe.
Now, I got a lot of data on all the fossilized fish. Millions of fossilized seashells on Lake Titicaca that are from the Pacific. They're not freshwater. Yeah, it's all this. It's so crazy. The Temple of Kaisaiya is 390 feet long by 360 feet wide. It's amazing. It's gigantic. You just showed a picture of it, so like that right there?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's a vast complex. Look at the size of that.
Now, you got to understand, they call it a temple, but it probably wasn't. It probably had stories, like a high-rise building. This is just the foundation.
Yeah.
It probably had all kinds of rooms and all that.
Yeah, that's crazy to think that all happened on.
So Pumapunku was a pier. It was a pier. And they're saying, and some of these researchers, remember, the ancient aliens saying that those H-box were for landing platforms, for UFOs, and all kinds of imaginative BS. But archaeologists who studied those H-blocks say that those are really good docking mechanisms for ships, and that they would put those H-blocks on piers and ships would come in and tie off on them. They were just decorative. So yeah, they kind of get out of control with that. But these ruins that you see, this area supported a population of 100,000 to 120,000 people.
Yeah, some crazy standing stones.
Oh, look, somebody came to verify the age of the city, and radiocarbon dating of the artifacts also supported what the Bolivians said about 1700 BC. The reason I'm being detailed specific on the dating is because the Ogygian flood was 1687 BC. But you've got these sensationalists without any data whatsoever who try to put these ruins at 11,000 BC. And they all try to comport with this younger Dryas and this fiction, this ice age fiction deal, as if icebergs were salt water. And they don't really understand that the entire polar regions and caps and icebergs and glaciers aren't salt water.
Fresh.
They're fresh water that appear every time a vapor canopy collapses. And when they finally melt off and the sea levels rise, the vapor canopy comes back. And the northern and southern extremities are no longer buried in ice. And we know this because we have maps.
Oh, maps
that
show
Antarctica. We have maps of the Arctic. We also have all kinds of archaeological stuff going on. What's that Arctic in the North Pole? They got that island.
Hyperborea.
They got an island where they have actually excavated apple trees that still have apples hanging in the
Svalbard.
Yeah, so I think that's it. But apple trees in the permafrost, showing that when the vapor canopy fell, whole 80-foot tall trees were buried in snow and frozen in place.
Makes sense.
Apple trees where the apples still are were found in the Arctic Circle, frozen solid. Yeah, guys, it's the vapor canopy collapsing that creates all the ice pack, all that. Mm. So, anyway. we've exhausted our pictures?
No, we got a few left.
How long was we've been going on this video?
No, we had a meetup yesterday. So I think it's over.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome. We had an awesome meetup.
I still got to post the pictures. But we had about 50 people show up at the ranch house
in
New Mexico. They kind of got mad at us because some people went to the side of the restaurant and they were smoking some funny things. But you know what? They made so much money off 50 of us just showing up. It was awesome. I got to meet some people I've been knowing for years on YouTube. I had never been in person. Well, as a matter of fact, the whole crew here, everybody's going to dinner. I don't know if she wants to be named, but she was actually a member of Archaics. She was subbed to my channel before I even had 300 subs. And she used to support me. She used to send me jars full of olives, garlic olives. She used to encourage me and say, hey man, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Don't get discouraged. I had like 200 videos out and still didn't have 400 subs. And she used to encourage me and tell me, you know, and she lived right here in New Mexico. And she showed up at the meetup. And we're going to go to her place. Her and her husband are going to cook us some steaks. We're just going to have a blast. And just we're all going to hang out tonight at their place right here in New Mexico.
Oh, it's last night, right? So we're all on the garden, you know, on the patio here last night, right, all chilling. I was having a great night, you know, in and out the hot tub. It was brilliant. So we're watching the sky for UFOs and stuff, right? Because it's a UFO hotspot, yeah?
Yeah, man.
So I look up, right, and it's what they regard as Skylink. Literally, maybe, I don't know, but large white lights all connected up in like, you know, just...
I got some high-power binoculars right here, right here.
I went, what the fuck is that?
I couldn't believe it.
Jason ran in to get his camera to take a photograph. By the time he came back, he just went, switched off. Like it knew. Like it was
like it knew we were about to record. Yeah. It was like so bright. It was a whole string. Binoculars, it was an entire string of glowing orbs.
A mile long or something.
It had to be miles long at that altitude. Yeah.
But it was weird. The moment he came out, it just went like that. And it was really bright. You know, yeah, it was massive. There's a lot of crazy stuff in the sky out here. There's people live out here. And that's what they do with their life is they watch the sky. Because, you know, it is amazing skies here. They're big skies.
So, I'm going to get back to this real quick, because at Tiwanaku, we have another anomaly that's also comported with archaeological findings other elsewhere in the world. And one is that the stone slabs on which the temples and buildings of Tiwanaku were built on were 440 tons. They're massive slabs! And you just showed pictures of them.
Yeah, yeah.
We only have that at a few places in the ancient world.
Baalbek is it?
I was about to say that.
Yeah.
One of them is Baalbek, which is interesting because Baalbek also has the same thing Easter Island and Tiwanaku have. It was also destroyed in the same year. As I'll show in another video, Baalbek was also destroyed in 1687 BC. But what's fascinating is that archaeologists have found workshops at Baalbek where they were still excavating and mining and quarrying stone, and they found the same thing. Hammers and chisels were left on the ground as if the men were fleeing for their lives. And they left, just like at Easter Island, the largest stone statue, 70 foot long, is still in the quarry. It's already shaped and dressed. All they had to do was detach it. Because it's in situ. They had to detach it and then transport it. They never got that chance.
Never got a chance.
Because the Ogygian cataclysm stopped all work. In Baalbek, the same thing. They built this massive platform. They put the trilithon in place. But the fourth stone is 70 foot long, just like Easter Island. 70 foot long, sitting in the core. You've seen pictures of it.
God, it's endless times. It's supposed to be the biggest megalith.
The biggest block in the world was still in the quarry. They hadn't quite finished it. It's like all these construction projects around the world were going off at the same time, and they all ended the same way.
Yeah, man, it makes so much sense. That's exactly what's happened.
So, it's crazy. See right here? The quarry near Tiwanaku is evidence that the work of building was interrupted. For cut and prepared stones were just left abandoned.
Very interesting.
It wasn't just the hammers.
Same as Baalbek.
Well, just like, you probably didn't know this, but at Easter Island, many of the statues that were finished were found not at the quarry and not on the coast of all the other ones. They were found on an ancient road where they were being transported. They just got left right there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I did see something about that in the past. They said they're like, the natives said they walk there and they actually tried to, you know, walk a stone like with ropes because there's no trees on the island to transport them. Nobody knows how they actually moved them. So no trees on Easter Island.
So here's something we need to get to. This is about the Ogygian delusion. So of the Aymara branch of peoples in the Andes Mountains in South America, the Urus, E-U-R-U, the Urus are the oldest people there. Their traditions tell the story of Tiwanaku, but that's a Sumerian word. Half of the cities in the Near East were all prefixed with UR and URU.
Like Ur, the good
Uruk, all of them. So the biblical Eric. So remember, we have crossover with ancient Babylon here in Tiwanaku. But here we have the Uru tradition of local Indians claim that they lived in the area before Tiwanaku was built, before the time the sun was hidden. The phoenix, it's the phoenix all over again, darken the sun. So, now, this is a memory, this is when the sun was hidden, this is a memory of the vapor canopy. Dating Tiwanaku to a pre-flood antiquity, for it was the great flood when the sun was born. Remember, guys, the sun was born at the Great Flood. 552 years later, the sun was killed That's a phoenix cycle, 552 years, 1687 BC. All right. So we're going to get there. I'm almost there now. Where are we at on time?
I really couldn't say.
Okay.
We've got 818 people watching. I do appreciate you being here. Thanks, guys, for being here. Share this out if you can.
Oh, we're not done.
No,
we're not done. So, the Urus have told anthropologists that Tiahuanaco was built before the time of the Great Darkness. That was 1687 BC. So I found that really interesting. And then this is, look at that right there. W.J. Perry, Archaic Civilization, in his book Children of the Sun in 1923, he said the entire world's dynasties, all of them fell. What's that date?
Oh, 1688, almost 1700.
Scientific bull's eye. He said about 1688.
That is fascinating.
It's amazing.
Wow.
He didn't know anything about the phoenix. Didn't know anything about none of that. So here's Colonel Fawcett disappeared. Many people associate Tiahuanaco to giants. Because who else is going to be able to build blocks as big and move them? So, I mean, it's just, so let's say some over 200 tons, 36-foot long blocks. The average block is like 30 foot. The bigger ones are 36 foot. But in the book Tiahuanaco, you showed Peru incidents of travel and exploration in the land of the Incas by Squire. He wrote that in no part of the world have I seen stones cut with such mathematical precision and admirable skill as in Peru. And in no part of Peru are there any to surpass those which are scattered over the plains of Tiahuanaco. That's amazing. Mm. All right, so we've been through all this material, man. Now we need to decode that gate, don't we?
Yeah, man.
We need to show them the gate of the sun.
Indeed. I'm on it.
Okay. So I'm going to get that book. Hans Billings' book. I'm going to write that book.
Okay. Okay. Just give us a second, guys. Just bring up this. Gate of the Sun. And the epic book. So there we go.
All right, that's the Gate of the Sun. So before we actually show that, can you show the camera on me so I can show them these?
Yeah, sure. Hang on a minute. I can't really see you on that.
Oh, no, just take that off. So
what you mean? Sorry.
Yeah. There we go.
What you mean? Take the camera off.
Put it on us. Huh? Like you've been doing. So they can see us.
Oh, you mean switch that off? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, they can see us right here, huh?
Yeah, so they can. I've got 2 foot suit.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, right. I did that.
I'm tech retarded.
Okay.
All right, so 1974 book, Secret of the Ages. Brinsley LePure Trench. In this book called Lost Worlds by Robert Charot. In this book here.
Yeah, it's here.
But mainly in H.S. Bellamy's book from over 100 years ago called Built Before the Flood, The Problem of Tiahuanaco Ruins. In these books.
That's also 17,000 years ago in that book.
Yeah.
17,000 BC.
See, here's the problem. When archaeologists and scholars were researching the Gate of the Sun and they saw how precise it was, the locals told them that was a calendar. And that's what they found. When they looked at it, there was a calendar, it was a calendrical symbol. They could see the equinoxes and the solstices. It was made to interface with the symbols that are on the temple of Kalasaia, how you pronounce it. But what's really interesting is that in all three of these books, and in many other books, scholars were baffled as to how the Tiahuanaco could factor time. Because they could not find any evidence of a 365-day year. So they went by different animal symbols, and they determined, well, maybe the year was something else. So they looked at lunar cycles, and they looked at months, and nothing. By no species of analysis could they find any correlates with the way things move in the world today. That's the problem. scientists were using modern frames of reference and trying to impose that on an ancient system. Remember, guys, I told you this is the danger. This is why when hundreds of books were published about the Mayan long count going to end the world in 2012, Jason's publishing a book called Anunnaki Homeworld, where I corrected the math on the Mayan long count, and we went by the arithmetic that was understood by the Maya and not the 365 day that they didn't know about. When you go with Mayan mathematics, you find out that it was a sexagesimal system based off units of 20 and 60, and we find out that the Mayan long count was 1,872,000 days, divided by the ancient American number of 13. That's 144,000 days of Bactan. This was a Mayan epic. It was precisely 400 years of 360 days each. That's the whole Mayan long count. And when you factor it that way, you don't get 2012 as the end date. You get 2046 as an end date. So all I did was look at the gate of the sun, which is a calendar, and according to all these scholars that wrote about this the Tiahuanacans, all they could conclude was that Tiahuanaco's two facts. One of them is their calendar is based off of the sun. And two, their year is equally divided in 12 parts. Simple as that. It was that simple. And then, taking those two facts, scientists, academia, tried to impose the 360-day calendar. They tried to impose the Venus almanacs, the movements of Venus, the eclipse calendars, the lunar calendar. Nothing worked with the Tiahuanaco calendar because they're using modern frames of reference. But if we go by the old world calendar, the calendar that was in effect for the Maya, the Olmec, the calendar that I showed that was in effect for ancient Egypt, Sumer, Babylon, the pre-flood vapor canopy calendar. If you go by the old world's calendar, the gate of the sun right here is easily understood because on the left are 15 winged angels looking at the weeping god. 15 angels looking at the weeping god. On the other side of the calendar are 15 more angels looking at the weeping god. The weeping god is holding two pillars. These are the ancient pillars of heaven. He's making sure that the cosmological clock is turning the way it's supposed to. You are looking at a gate. In an ancient cosmology, the cycle of the world passed through 12 gates. It's real simple. This is why Inanna in the Sumerian epics, when she went to the underworld before she could see the sun again, she had to pass through 12 gates.
So 15 and 15, 30.
15 and 15 is 30. Each one of these deities represents a guardian of the day. That's a month. Mm. 15 days on the left, 15 days on the right, and they're all looking at the one God who's holding up the cosmos, the great celestial clock.
Bingo.
This right here is a single month. Every symbol here represents one day of the month. But the calendar is based off 12 divisions of the year. What is 30 days times 12?
365.
360 days.
Oh, 360, yeah.
Just like all the other ancient civilizations. It's that simple.
Jesus.
It's that simple.
It has to be. And ceremonies. That's the same for all of them then.
Yeah, it's all, every ancient civilization had 360 days for their calendar. And this is why none of these people can figure this out. They're trying to use a 365-day calendar when it's staring them in the face. We have all these Babylonian links in the ancient Babylonian calendar. I didn't make this up. You can verify this easily. The ancient Babylonian calendar was 360 days. Here it is right here. If you pass through 12 gates, you get a year, 360 days. This is why in the Sumerian text, when the Anunnaki went to the underworld, in order to get to the underworld, in order to get back from the underworld, they had to pass through 12 gates. It's all calendars, every bit of it.
Yes. Awesome. It was a lot more buried in the past, I noticed, than it is in the modern day. Have you seen that? It's up to here now, right, in the modern day. The ground level.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've excavated a lot of that.
Well, no shit.
That was laid down.
Practically buried.
Whoa, that's badass. That's a good find, man. That might be Poznanski there, huh? He was like a Russian dude or something.
Yeah, he's European. Yeah, he's not Mexican.
He's just in the local garb. Yeah. Look at his dog right there on the left.
Yeah. That's a groovy picture. No one's been there since then. These are the first people to be there.
Why is it 12? Nobody lives up there. It's 12,000 foot elevation.
Exactly. Who's going to live up there?
Nobody, that's why those ruins are so perfectly preserved.
Yeah.
But that really, that's our presentation. We have the archaeological, anthropological, we have the traditional evidence that all says 1687 BC was the year of destruction. We have the connections with Easter Island. We have the connections with the ancient Near East. Everything's lining up that the Heliolithic Maritime Empire all died 1687 BC, and it was a phoenix destruction. Even Harold T. Wilkins comports with this, and he didn't know anything about the phoenix. Even W.J. Perry said it was 1688 BC in his epic 550-page book called Children of the Sun, where he said that every dynasty in the entire world collapsed at that time, and he too did not know anything about the phoenix at all. 1687 BC was when Tiahuanaco ended, and the Gate of the Sun proves that they were on the old 360-day deal. That's our presentation. We did it.
Wow, J.O. I just kind of gobsmacked. That is so fucking good.
It's amazing.
I got goose pimples, bro. Look at that.
Goose pimples.
I got goose pimples.
That's good shit.
Fuck. Keep doing this.
That's good shit. I left a comment on Paul Cook's video this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Cook's in Egypt, and he's at the
temple. No, he's in Egypt now.
He's at the Temple of Karnak, just watching the filming. So I just left a comment and said, hey, man, it's good stuff, dude.
Yeah, he goes to Malta. He done the star fort in Malta in Valletta. It's an amazing star fort.
Star fort, we gotta tell the news.
Yeah. So, when is that? Next week we're going in.
Tuesday.
Tuesday when we leave here. We're gonna be going up to Northern Colorado. Because a friend of Jason's, we're going to hook up their guys, and basically he's going to take us to a star fort that nobody knows anything about.
It's on private. It's all private property. I've already seen a photograph of megalithic cut dressed blocks in a wall. And he said, he's going to treat us to a meal, and he's going to take us out on private property. And he said, hey man, you're more than welcome to film all this, man, but most people never even know this exists. They didn't even know this place exists.
Yes. So that's going to be absolutely epic. I can't wait to do that. Take some filmage. So everyone said outstanding. Yeah, it is. Just outstanding work. So thank you all for being here. I'm absolutely gobsmacked by that, guys. We just done some amazing. We got some, you know, just make sure to come back to Jason's channel in a day or so when we're going to do the obligatory necessary house cleaning.
Yeah, man, it's house cleaning time.
It's house cleaning time. It's got to be done. You know, nobody else seems to be doing it, so I think that, you know, we should definitely.
No, actually, all we're going to do is reverse the polarity.
Well, that's it.
We have NGOs or someone behind the scenes that's trying to guide narratives and trying to cut off voices and all that. We're going to flip it on them.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Exactly that. Yeah, not a connector to the energy. Just fucking flip it. Yeah, it's going to work. So, we all done here, Jason? That was absolutely thanks. Thanks, everybody. I see you all have an awesome time. 852 of you watching. So, that's not free bad. Thank you so much.
Hell yeah. I was in the Paul Cook video I was watching this morning. I was waiting for y'all to wake up and all that. It was really interesting, man, that you can see the modern cement.
Yeah.
They rebuilt Karnak.
But I did a post showing the old photographs, and you can get this like Google website that takes your camera around it, and you can just see them massive columns. You just got like all modern day cement. It's Hollywood. They did it with all of this in these Egyptian sites. Memphis, they did the same. These were absolute ruins when they found them, and the rest is just modern day put together Disneyland with a fake narrative to go with it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So, that's what we're doing. We're going to an old friend of mine who's been supporting my channel since before I had 300 subs.
Yeah.
And she has several books published, and she's also on YouTube. But she's been really encouragement to me in my earlier days when I was frustrated.
Yeah.
When I had like 300 videos and didn't even have 1,000 subs, I had people. She was one of them. I had some other people that were reaching out to me and said, "Hey, man, do not stop what you're doing. you're going to, it's going to catch. And they were right. They were, look at me now. I
mean, yeah, man.
They were right.
Yeah,
they're
right. But, so, just, word out, next month is this big meetup that we're having, guys, in Southern California. So, Carl, you can find that linked in the descriptions box below this video. Myself, Jason, Max Egan of Crow House.
Autodidactic.
Autodidactic. Campbell, who's in chat right now, guys.
Logan of Decode Your Reality.
And Danny.
Danny of Removing the Shackles and the Unfuckers Group. And we got one other person.
Toltec.
Toltec Shaman.
It's going to be literally biblical, guys. So, yeah, I'm buzzing, absolutely thinking about it. And if yesterday's meeting is anything to go by.
We were not expecting 50 people to show up at this little bitty restaurant in New Mexico.
Yeah.
Well, it was awesome. And I know a lot of people have flooded Facebook with all the pictures they took. I literally stood with about 30 different people and took pictures.
Yeah, I never had a chance to take pictures. It was just, you know, everyone knew me as well. I was like, well, it was just fantastic.
An old lady came up to me and said, Jason, I want to shake your hand because I'm scared of Martin.
She was scared of Martin. I had a couple of shakers, man.
Good shit.
It was awesome. So, yeah, what a fantastic time. So far, yeah, that's next month. So, yeah, we're going to be live in a little while on Jason's channel.
A couple of days.
I'll keep you all basically updated on my community tab. Make sure to keep an eye on that. Any information, it will all be in the community tab.
That's right.
You won't miss anything that we do. We will share along the way, and we'll take film, do shorts, and you won't miss anything. You haven't missed anything. Everywhere we be, you'll be with us, okay, guys?
That's right.
So you don't miss a trick. So it's good. 829 of you, share this out with like it if you did like this video. Spread the word, okay? Jason and Martin are going to be doing a bit of house cleaning around the internet. So brace your fucking selves.
Interwebs.
Oi,
oi.
Oi, oi. Oi, oi, Savaloy. Thanks, guys. You're awesome.
Much love.
Fine.